Today is Thursday, December the 12th, 2019. We're going to hear Rav Moshe Soloveitchik Shir on Parshas Vayishlach.
I'd like to say a couple of things, please. I'm going to silence my phone. I'll probably get a bunch of happy birthday calls. No. Forget it, Daniel. It's really the Revitsons. Yeah.
Don't worry. I'm sorry.
Anyway, I'm going to say. Deborah, I'd like you to say something. We so much appreciate your generosity in sharing your magnificent rabbi husband, with all of us for all these years, and allowing him to come and teach and change this community in our lives and other communities and people in those communities' lives. And we really appreciate, your generosity in spirit, your good humor, and driving him here and back safely. So anyway, thank you. Happy birthday. Only know from nice things. Let's celebrate a lot. Let's celebrate a lot of simchas and good health, all of us.
Amen.
Please, God. What we're going to do is we're going to silence our phones, right? Now, I'm silencing. I shut it off.
You don't know how to do it.
It's off. Okay. Please enjoy the food. We're Fleishik. I know you didn't know that, but enjoy your food. And
I don't remember anything. I didn't know it was Fleishik. I didn't know it was your birthday.
Yeah, I know. It's okay. Don't worry about it.
It's the second thing.
Yeah, it's the third thing that goes for you, Dan. So make sure you clean off the tables when you're done. Welcome, Rabbi Berger. Welcome back.
It's Jerry's birthday.
Yeah. That's from Israel.
Yeah.
Okay, welcome back.
We're going to be davening in approximately, right a few minutes after the class. We're going to be, Lynn and I are going to be driving to Florida for a little while, and I'll try to make some arrangements, but we are going to have classes here, and there will be food, so I'll try to do milk and conflations if we can.
Not at the same time.
We'll
be like the malachim.
I'd like to thank Rabbi Berger. I'd like to thank Young Israel for all the generosity for so many, many years to allow us to have this great class. And Rav Moshe, it's going to be 28 years?
I don't count.
Yeah, it's almost going to be 28 years now that we've had this class and others. And I hope, with God's help, I'll be able to have these classes for at least another 120. Rick Marshall, how's that?
My grandfather, Paskin, you're not allowed to wish somebody to live to 100, they should live to 120 years, because that implies not more than that.
Right, but this
and
is
that
a
would be a prohibition of Kalola.
Well, at least 120.
At least 120 more years of class. Okay.
I don't know if I'll be driving this
morning.
So, anyway, we're going to miss all of you for a little while, but
we're coming down.
Come on down, and we're going to be. I'd like to thank certain people who have been generous over the years, and who have, and also those who have come and offered to come early and schlep the food in from the car and help me set up. I mean, it's a lot of work, but we get it done. So I want to thank them as well. And is there anything I'm forgetting?
Yes, sir.
Okay, yes, sir. Forgetting to sit down? I want to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos and a Freilich Hanukkah. And you can always feel free to call us.
Happy to respond.
Well, we're in Florida.
First of all, I want to wish Jerry a happy birthday. Actually, first of all, I want to wish my wife a happy birthday. Jerry, second of all. Okay.
That's right.
Okay. Okay, so good.
Well, I'm glad he corrected himself.
Okay, and then I want to mention that the class is dedicated by Dr. Goldstein in memory of his father, Gedaliyahu Ben Dober, whose yahrzeit is today, and his mother, Nitzchia Baz David, whose yard site was in the second of Kislev. Also, it's dedicated by Jerry in memory of his father, whose yard site will be on the 23rd of Kislev. So that's, okay. All right. Okay. Now, in Parshas VaYishlach, we find the Yaakov sends Malachim. There is a dispute whether what Malachim means. There are those who say that Malachim means angels, and there are those, the word Malach really means an agent, a messenger, whatever. Somebody who acts on my behalf. And but it actually starts, it's very interesting, to Esav. But the Rambam doesn't discuss the word Malachim here. If my memory serves me correctly, Rabbeinu Avraham ben Rambam, who was in his commentary on the Chumash, he explains Malachim here not to be angelic, heavenly figures, but shlichim, messengers, ambassadors, I guess that would be a best word, ambassadors, because the angelic figures are God's ambassadors to perform whatever task is being performed. Now, the Rambam has a very complicated opinion. And the Rambam says that whenever the Torah talks about people having communication with a malach, with an angel, it was only a vision. It was only a vision. It wasn't while they were fully awake. Now, some understand that to mean that according to the Rambam, there is no such thing as an angel. I don't subscribe to that opinion. I would suggest, and the Ramban in Parshas Vayera is very strong against the Rambam on that issue, and he brings some strong proofs. I mean, not that the Rambam wouldn't be able to answer it up, I'm sure he would, but the Rambam says that the three malachim that came to Avram, he says that was a vision, because Vayira Elav Hashem, God appeared to him, meaning the malachim, it was a vision that he had, and the three angels appeared to him. That whole thing was sort of like a dream that took place. So the Ramban says, well, then how did they destroy Sdom? How did they save Lot from Sdom? These are strong questions that the Rambam doesn't address. So that's it. But then, and the Rambam says also that here, in the end of last week's Sedra, the Yaakov Holech Ludarko, Yaakov, after he makes his peace treaty, it would be contemporary, makes his peace treaty with Lavan. So Holech Ludarko, he goes on the road. Vayifkishu bo malachei Elohim, vayifku bo malachei Elohim. So angels of God encountered him. Vayomer Yaakov kasher rohim machre Elohim zeh. This is a godly temp. Vayikra shem hamokam ahu machanoyim. He called the place machanoyim, two machanos. The Medrash understands that there were two camps of angels. However, the Rambam understood it that, in a sense, it's either the Rambam or Ben Avram Ben Rambam, I don't remember, that said that he saw his camp and the camp of the Malachim, of the angels, as being one camp, Machanoyim. The two camps became one camp. So this is the way the Rambam explains it, and the Rambam is very strong that this was only a vision. He saw the Malachim in a vision. Now, this doesn't mean, as some wanted to suggest, that the Rambam is saying there's no such thing as angels. I can't accept that. I think what the Rambam is saying, there are times when it's only a dream, but there are times when we can only visualize. In other words, there could be many, many malachim, but we do not have the ability to visualize the malachim. Only through dreams are we able to visualize the malachim. That's what I think is what the Rambam held. In other words, there are times when it's just a dream, and sometimes we need a vision to be able to visualize them, but they are there. And I think to a certain degree that could be used, although it requires more explanation, how Abraham has a dream of three malachim coming to visit him. And then these three malachim are going to Sdom, or two of them, go to Sdom, one to destroy Sdom and one to save Lot. Now, if it's all a vision, how do they go? So, in other words, Abraham visualized the Malachim through a dream, but it's not that those Malachim didn't exist. They existed, and they did go to Sdom, but the only way Avram was able to visualize them was through a vision, a heavenly vision. He wasn't able to visualize them just like that. Yeah?
Did he prepare the food for them?
In the dream. All that was in the dream.
Okay.
His wife prepared it for them too.
That was also in the dream. And that was also in the dream.
That's not problematic. That's all in the dream.
Yeah,
like
that's not. I have that part. That's I don't have any problems.
No, because the other thing actually happened in Sdom, and either it did or didn't happen. If it happened, that's outside of it.
Right. Again, dreams could be more real than facts. In other words, it could be that Sarah did have an attitude of, "Hey, it's something like that." After all, Avram did receive commitments from God about having descendants, and it could be that Sarah had some questions as to whether these commitments should be taken literally or not taken literally. That's possible, and that could be part of the dream. That could be part of the dream that Avram had. Well, nevuah is, first of all, according to the Rambam, most forms of nevuah are also through this type of thing. You know, that's it's not when you see God talking to you, that's also in a vision of some sort. It's not. That's the Rambam's opinion.
We have nevuah all the time.
So we probably have more instances of people having visions than we have cases of nevuah. Now I'm not talking about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is a different story. Most of them, according to the Rambam, most of them will be through visions, according to the Rambam. Not say there might be individual cases where it's some other way, but it is a little baffling, honestly, that Avraham should see them in a vision, whereas Lot deals with them on an actual basis. And my answer would be that Avraham had a relationship with Malachim, whereas with Lot's case, it was something completely out of the ordinary. So when it's something that's completely out of ordinary, there's more reason, although not always, where there's a task to be accomplished other than just give over a message, and it has to be done in a manner that they see them actually, as in the case of Lot. So that was that. Yeah,
but he's not the only one that saw them. Who were not on any kind of spiritual plane, the populace of...
I got a Bilam's donkey also saw. Okay. Okay. The issue, though, might be, it could be with just Bilam's dream about the donkey seeing. I don't know that the donkey had the dream. Okay, so... anyway, but that's... The Rambam, by the way, says explicitly that Bilam seeing the Malachim, seeing the angels, was a dream. So that's what the Rambam. And then the Rambam says, and I have to point out, the Ramban disagrees with all of this. The Rambam then says, and this is where everybody disagrees with the Rambam. At this point, even his son, Rabbeinu Avraham, in his Perush and Chumash, I was so troubled by the Rambam and Mor Nevuchim that I was sure that the son would bring the problem up and defend his father. Well, he sure brought it up, but he says it doesn't seem illogical, was his response. But anyway, so he says the whole episode... The Rambam says the whole episode with the ish, the person who fights Yaakov and who, in a sense, wounds Yaakov. That's also part of a dream. That was also part of a dream.
Or the Rambam.
That part I have no problems with. By the way, Rabbeinu Avraham doesn't have problems with that also. But he says that Malach was from the group of Malachim that Yaakov encountered in the end of Parshas Vayetze. It seems that the Rambam's opinion, he doesn't say this explicitly, but I think his son does, that the Rambam's opinion, we say, Ein Muktam Mucha B'Torah. In other words, the fight, somehow these two episodes, the seeing of the Malachim of Machanayim and the episode of, doesn't say explicitly, but it seems, and the fighting with the Ish, fighting with the Malach, that took place between Jacob, which we say was the angel of Esav, according to the Rambam, these two, it was all like part of the same vision. The Machanayim and the angel from that group of angels, he is the one that fought Yaakov. And this is where Rabbeinu Avraham ben Rambam is very troubled. He says, on one hand, they're called Malachi Elohim. They're called angels of God. On the other hand, the Rambam comes and says that this angel who was part of the Malachi Elohim, he gets into a fight with Yaakov and he wounds Yaakov. The saving grace is that at the end, he gives Yaakov a bracha and he even names Yaakov, gives him the special name of Yisrael, Kisarisa Melehim B'Manashim Batuchal. So the question is, what is going on here? If these are Malachi Elohim, these are angels of God, how is it possible that these angels, that one of these angels of God, or more, whatever it was, get involved in a strife, in a fight against Yaakov? How is it possible? Now, there is a very famous thought of the Beis Halevi and I think it's very, very important, this thought. And perhaps it's important for us, certainly in Israel, to know, because, you know, times change. And we're happy that times change, but we have to remain on guard. Yaakov Avinu, when he sees Esav is coming at him, so he makes a tefillah. So first he divides in two groups, and he prepares leduran. Duran means a present. To put it in contemporary terms, diplomacy. Diplomacy, litfila for davening, umuchama and war. Now the question that bothered me is, it should be tefillah first. First you daven, then you prepare for fighting. But it seems to me that it was duran and tefillah together. And Muhammad is also, but once he said Muhammad with Durin, it's understandable. In other words, whatever approach you use, you have to daven to God for help in that approach. And the truth is, we see that that's the case. Because what was the tefillah, what was the prayer that Yaakov made to God? The prayer that Yaakov made to God was, Hatzilenina, please save me, Miyad Achi, from the hand of my brother, Miyad Esav, from the hand of Esav. And the Beis Halevi asks a question that is a very simple question. And that question is, why did he say, Miyad Achi, Miyad Esav, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav? He should have said, from the hand of my brother Esav, Miyad Achi Esav. Why from the hand of my brother Esav? From the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esav. But he understood that there were two possibilities. He understood there were two possibilities. One possibility was that Esav would come in the name of brotherhood. Arafat, Yamach Shema. He came in the name of brotherhood, in the name of peace. He came in the name of peace, Arafat. And there were people who actually believed him. I remember reading editorials about what a bad guy Begin was and what a good guy Arafat was, written by Jews. And there were people that were taken in. So very often when our enemies come in the name of friendship, not saying that we have to reject the friendship, but we have to be on guard. And to a certain degree, I think that that is part of the problem with the labor government in Israel. And I understand where it's coming from. You know, there's so much fighting. So many people's lives were lost. There is this the need and this desire to that things have to change, but they have to really change. And they're there every time. Another bomb, another bus was bombed. So, it wasn't him. Well, you know, part of governing a country, first of all, it was him. That's the first thing. But part of governing a country, and it's well known, listen, he had an alliance. First of all, he was a terrorist. And he had an alliance openly with terrorists. But more than that, part of governing a country is to assume responsibility what happens. Of course, you can't assume 100% responsibility. But when you have hundreds of rockets going from one country to another, you can't just say, oh, somebody else was doing it. Now, if one person shoots a person, okay, you can say a crazy did it. But when you have hundreds of rockets going from one place to another, if you're not going to be able to govern, don't govern. Then Israel has to come in. Then you're allowing them to govern. You might be getting the salary. So, the point is, Hatzileni no miyad ochi, if they come in brotherhood, you have to be on guard. And we need prayers. And everybody knows, they say there are no atheists in foxholes. So people get very, very religious when their bullets are all around them. The point is, we need God's help even when the bullets aren't around us. That's Hatzileini Miyad Achi from my brother. And Miyad Esav was a murderer. So if he comes as Esav in his normal way, then we certainly need help. So, and I think Miyad Achi, that was the Durin. He prepared him for, he sent him gifts. He sent Esav gifts. That was what in contemporary times would be diplomacy. But even when we have diplomacy, we need prayer. And certainly when in time of war, we need prayer. So Yaakov prayed to God for both possibilities. But Yaakov understood that even when Esav comes in friendship, we have to be on guard. And perhaps sometimes more on guard than when they come in war. Because when we have to be on friendship, you don't know what's going to happen. When there's war, we know. But I think there is another point that's being said to Yaakov over here. And I want to mention a certain question. I've mentioned it here before. Hanukkah is coming. People said it was a little too early to talk about Hanukkah. But, hey, you know, I was passing by a non-kosher restaurant that was next to a kosher restaurant, and I heard the music from the non-kosher restaurant, and it was Hanukkah songs. What can I tell you? Anyway, it could be they used last year's calendar or something. Anyway, so... so... they assumed it was the same time of December. So this year Hanukkah is a lot later. Anyway, whatever it was, so the Lubavitch Rebbe, yes, an interesting question, and that's not the type of question that would prevent me from falling asleep at night if I was tired, but it's a question. The Rambam, there's a Gemara. The Gemara says, if somebody has only enough money to buy one candle, and he has a choice between a Shabbos candle, and a Hanukkah candle. So the halacha is, and you would have thought otherwise, but the halacha is you buy the Shabbos candle, even though the Hanukkah candle is Pesumin Nisa, and Pesumin Nisa takes precedence over even Kiddush. If you have money to buy a Hanukkah candle and wine for Kiddush, so you buy the Hanukkah candle, not the wine for Kiddush, because it's Pesumin Nisa. But if you, when it comes to it makes the miracle known. When it comes to a choice between a Shabbos candle and a Hanukkah candle, so you have to choose the Shabbos candle. And the question is why? And the answer, you have to realize that we're talking in a period of time that they didn't have electric lights. And so he says, because of Shalom Bayis, peace in the house. Why peace in the house? You know, when you don't have lights in the house, you're likely to trip, you're likely to fall, and you like to get frustrated. You know what happens when people become frustrated? Who they take it out on. So I assume it took you a minute. Anyway, so I assume. I know. So because of Shalom Bayis, peace in the house. Okay. The Rambam mentions that in the laws of Hanukkah. He says, if you have a choice between a Hanukkah candle and a Shabbos candle, you take a Shabbos candle because of peace in the house. And then the Rambam, which is not his regular approach, goes into, and this is how he concludes the laws of Hanukkah, into a whole sermon, if I could use that word, about the importance of peace in general and peace in the house specifically. Now, to the Lubavitch Rebbe, he asks the question. He says, the more proper place, if the Rambam wanted to give a sermon about peace in the house, the best place would have been in Hilchos Ishus, in the laws of marriage, or in Hilchos Shabbos, in the laws of Shabbos, where he talks about the mitzvah of Shabbos candles. Hanukkah, he just says that Hanukkah candles, that the Shabbos candles take precedence over Hanukkah candles. He doesn't talk about the mitzvah. But the mitzvah is in Hilchos Shabbos, so he should have discussed it either in Hilchos Shabbos, in the laws of Shabbos, or discussed it in the laws of Hilchos Ishus, the laws that pertain to marriage. Why does he give the sermon about the importance of peace and peace in the house? The name of God is erased for the sake of peace in the house, and all kinds of mentioning so many things about peace. Why does he mention it over there? Now, what I think is, because the Hanukkah was a different type of war. They had other such wars in the past, but Hanukkah was a civil war. It was the Mishyavnim. It didn't start off with the Greeks. It started off with the Mishyavim, the Hellenistic Jews. And later on, Greece came in, and it wasn't Greece, by the way, it was the Greeks, Syrian Greeks, that came in to support the Hellenistic Jews. And in a sense, to a certain degree, and I think this is an important point, and I think people have to understand it. Why is it that so many Jews Hellenized? I think that they had a very bad self-perception about themselves as Jews. And Greece at that time was the source of philosophical wisdom. Now the Rambam, who probably was one of the greatest philosophers of all times, not just among the Jews, the Rambam writes, he writes that Greece is the source, is one of the foundations of philosophy, but his feeling was, and it does have historical basis, he says that the Greeks got part of their approach in philosophy, of course not the same approach, he says they got it from the Jews. And the truth is, Plato writes that when he was in Egypt, he met the Oriental scholars, and the Oriental scholars in Egypt were not the people from China. So those were it's established that those were Jewish scholars, and he got from them everything that he could. My uncle has different theories who they were, but that's kind of irrelevant. So there is a foundation. The Rambam was clearly well versed in Plato, and as an Aristotle. And by the way, the Rambam was an admirer of Aristotle, not morally, obviously, but intellectually, he was an admirer of Aristotle. The Rambam, when he talks about prophecy, he says a prophet has to have moral perfection and intellectual perfection, both. And he says an example of intellectual perfection, clearly not moral perfection, was Aristotle. So the Rambam held Aristotle. The Ramban, when he mentions Aristotle, I think he says Yimach Shemo V'Zichro. So may his name and memory be erased. But the Rambam, well, because the Rambam was viewing it from the moral perspective, and unfortunately, immorally, he was not very high on the scale. So, but the Rambam felt, so in a sense, they felt, the Hellenistic Jews, they did not take pride in their Jewish identity. So they Hellenized themselves. So that's why whatever it was a very sad tragedy, because we had a civil war. It wasn't us defending ourselves from the enemies from other countries. We were defending ourselves from Jews who were rebelling against tradition, rebelling against the Jewish people, who did not allow their fellow Jews to serve God. So it was an internal battle. It was an internal battle. And in a sense, the victory of Hanukkah restored peace. Now, what does Hanukkah tell us? That we shouldn't just focus on the enemies at the border, the problems at the border or from outside the border, but we have to focus also on the potential of problems within the border. And when we focus on peace within the border, we start from the bottom up. We start from the house, the home. That's why Hanukkah is a home-oriented. Where do we light the Hanukkah candles? We don't light the Hanukkah. Now the customs we light in shul. But the main place for lighting the Hanukkah candles was at the door of the home. In other words, we're celebrating the restoration of internal peace among the Jewish people. So Hanukkah is dedicated to this idea of the restoration of internal peace, not just peace from the outside. On the contrary, the war with the Syrians went on for 50 years more. But more or less, the internal struggle came to an end in Chaf Hei Kislev. So Hanukkah, the celebration of Hanukkah, for the most part, is a celebration of internal peace. So, you know, it's focusing on what's going on within our own camp. And we're dealing with people that adopted idolatry. But it's not limited to people who adopted idolatry. The beginning of next week's Sedra is Vayeshev Yaakov Beretz Megurei Ovid Beretz Canaan. Rashi says, Bikesh Yaakov Leishev B'Shalva. Yaakov thought that after he dealt with Esav, after he dealt with Lavan, now finally, Esav is in Seir, Lavan is in Haran. Now I can be at peace, I can be at rest. I don't have to be on guard. I don't have to worry about Shechem anymore. But that's the problem. The problem is, it's not enough to worry about the problems from without. We have to worry about the internal struggles as well. And Kofzal Lov Rogzal Shel Yosef. A fight developed within his house because he was focusing on the outside. Now, the Shvatim and Yosef were both tzaddikim. One time there was a big dispute in Balazhin Yeshiva. Who should be the Rosh Yeshiva? It was between the Netziv and the Beis Halevi. Now the Netziv was my great, great, great-grandfather, and the Beis Halevi was my great-great-grandfather. So I'm neutral in that. I'm neutral in the conflict. Okay, so, but there was a dispute, and they brought in a Beis Din to settle the conflict, who should be the head of the Balazs Yeshiva. One of the members of the Beis Din was Reb Zev, the Magid Meisharim of Vilna. And so Reb Zev said, he says, when he gives a drasha, so let's say Parshas Bereishis, so he always likes to have two sides, and to point out the bad traits of one side and the good traits of the other side. That was his style of speech. He says, comes to Parshas Bereishis, so he has Kayan Hevel, whoever it might be. When it comes to Parshas Noach, so it's Noach versus the Dor HaMabul, the generation of the Mabul. When it comes to Parshas Lech Lecha, the fight was between maybe it was the fight of the that Avram had with the other kings, whoever it was, in Parshas Lech Lecha, or it had to do with the people of Mitzrayim when he went down. There were two. There was a villain, and there was the righteous person. And then in Parshas Vayera, so also he says till he gets to Parshas Vayeshev, he says, who's the fight there? The fight there is between Yosef and his brothers. He says Yosef was a tzaddik, and the brothers were tzaddikim. So he says on Parshas Vayeshev, he doesn't speak. He says because his whole approach in speaking was to have a villain in this. He says, in Parshas Vayeshev, he can't have a villain. It was Tzadikim. Now, I want to suggest maybe the message, and that's why, by the way, Parshas Vayeshev is usually the Shabbos before Hanukkah. Why? Because it talks to a certain degree of an internal. Of course, there were no Mishyavanim there. It was everybody L'Shem Shemayim, everybody devoted to God. But nevertheless, there was animosity. Animosity between people who are devoted to God. Now the Rambam, when he talks about the Malachi Elohim that went up the ladder and went down the ladder, he says, who are the Malachim? He says, the Malachim symbolized the Nevi'im, the prophets. Because a Malach, as I said, is an agent. So you have Malachim that are agents that give messages and dreams. And the prophets are agents who give messages also. But the idea is, I've mentioned the Rambam Mor Nevuchim, he says, a prophet has to perfect himself. He has to go up the ladder. But there comes a time when he has to fulfill his mission and he has to go down the ladder also. Sometimes it's a lot harder going down the ladder than going up the ladder. But a Navi, a prophet, has to do both. That's the symbol. I think that maybe the message that Yaakov was getting when I first started this year was, in other words, we tend to be more relaxed when we're dealing with our own. But sometimes you could have people, both sides, devoted to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like by Yosef and his brothers. They were all, what is Malach? A Malach is a person who has a mission from God. Yosef had a mission from God. The brothers had a mission from God. But nevertheless, the Jewish people can become wounded. Can become wounded. They could be even a Malachi Elohim, even the Malachim who have a mission from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and are devoted to their mission. But sometimes there could be an internal conflict that could cause a problem. We should, when we fight the Esav, and we fight, when we fight Esav, and we fight Lavan, we have to be aware that we have to try our best to make sure that we don't see just the problems from outside the community. We have to see the problems with inside the community also. And we have to be on guard that to try as much as possible to limit those conflicts from taking place. Okay.
Please clean off the tables as best as you can. Leave the tablecloths on. I want to wish everybody a good Erev Shabbos and a good Shabbos. And we'll see you soon enough. We're going to be davening in about 2 minutes.